2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce here. Another Baseball America podcast and YouTube recording. And today we're going to talk Rule 5 draft, which is something that this time of year, Jeff and I think talk Rule 5 draft pretty much every day. We kind of have our own little personal Rule 5 podcast, bouncing names off of each other most days. But today we're hitting the record button so that you all can be part of it as well. So, Jeff, I'll start with a question that I know the answer to, which is, do you have Rule 5 fever?
I do, in fact, have Rule 5 fever. We say the symptoms set in on 40-man roster declaration day. And, you know, it's just gotten stronger since. And we're still in the sort of infancy of the Rule 5 work. I feel like this in particular, because it's such a short window of time, that all this is sort of done in an official manner, at least, and something that you can really work. The days before, I feel like, is when the names start to come in fast and furious that maybe we don't have on the list, or reassuring us of some of the names that we've already written about and mentioned as potential options in the Rule 5.
It is something where we already have Rule 5 Draft Preview 1.0. By the time you see this, listen to this, we may have 2.0 out, because we've already written up, mainly Jeff has written up, I think we're up to like 25 or 30 names now. I am trying to add a couple of that too, between writing top 10s, because we got a lot of top 10s going up and getting a magazine done as well. But I think before we kind of dive into this year's Rule 5 Draft, I think we need to, for one, I do want to explain the Rule 5 Draft. If there is someone listening, watching this, who's like, what's the Rule 5 Draft? Okay, this is one of the oldest remaining things going on in baseball. Like, it really does date back almost to the days of the start of what we call organized baseball. It just was called the draft at that point. It wasn't the Rule 5 Draft. There wasn't any other draft. The Rule 4 Draft, the draft that we think of as the draft, didn't start until the Rule 5 draft had been going on for almost three quarters of a century. This thing's been going on forever. And the roots of it were that you had this situation where everyone was kind of their independent league at that point, right? Like, we think of AA, AAA, big leagues, major, you know, low A, all that now. That wasn't the case at the time. There was Class B, Class C, Class D, Class A, Class AA, all that. You had those leagues, those levels. But if you were if you were a team, the Making Peaches, or you were the, you know, whatever, you weren't affiliated to a major league team. And sometimes you didn't want to let go of your players, understandably. Yeah. But at the same time, there needed to be a way that you didn't have the best players kind of just stuck at a level if they didn't, you know, there needed to be a way for movement.
Yeah.
And so what was developed was the draft, where teams at higher levels could draft players at lower levels and then pay a fee to the team that drafted them, you know, that they drafted them from. And that's kind of where the draft, now it's gone through many iterations. We talk about Roberto Clemente being the greatest Rule 5 draft pick of all time. It was a very different world at that time. The eligibility rules were very different than what we're talking about now. For a while, the draft wasn't even still wasn't the Rule 5 draft yet, because the real draft didn't exist. But during the time of bonus babies, the draft was often a way to force teams to carry bonus babies, or allowed a way to try to limit bonuses by letting other teams select players off of those rosters and all that. And then eventually we got to the system we have now. It's the eligibility rules. This changed. But the idea being, every MLB team has the 40-man roster, and a player who is signed as a 19 or older has 4 years from when they sign, 4 seasons from when they sign, until they have to be protected. A player who signs at 18 or younger, so high school players, most high school players, draftees, and international players who sign before they turn 19, they have 5 seasons. So if you sign in January, then it's that season counts, and the next season. If you sign in October, that season doesn't count. That year doesn't count, because you signed after the season was over. But so now what we have is you have, so effectively this year, if you're a high school international player who was signed in 2020, which, weird year, 5-round draft, international delays and all that, but those are the first year eligibles on the high school international side. And then for the college side, much more normal now, the 20-round draft. If you're a 2021 draftee. And that's where I kind of will kick this back to you, Jeff, which is we've both been talking to scouts, front office officials about this and all. And I'd love to hype it up more because we both love the Rule 5 draft, but this is not one of those like, wow, look at all the talent that's available for the Major League draft, because the situations have changed a little bit as far as 20 round draft versus 40, 165 player rosters rather than kind of unlimited that we had. There's a lot of things that are making the Rule 5 draft a little bit tougher to find the talent. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, I feel like there's been a lot of maybe off the 40-man roster movement in recent years too, where you don't have those situations that we used to see even two or three years back, where there were organizations that had, you know, players that were probably a slam dunk 40-man roster ad in 10 other organizations. But, you know, they just, like the Dodgers, for example, with like a Ryan Noda or someone like that. We're not seeing that necessarily as much, it feels like, particularly on the position player side. I also think it's something that we wrote about. I think the first time I had sort of talked about it was in our coverage of the 2022 Rule 5 draft, was just the impact of the 2020 draft and, you know, the lack of sort of round 6 to 12 players that might have taken a step forward, didn't have the pedigree, didn't have the bonus that, you know, when all options are equal, the guy who got paid $3 million is probably going to get put into the 40-man roster first. And some of that obviously is going to come down to roles, et cetera. I think we're seeing a lot more of the options last year and this year being guys who have been eligible multiple times for the Rule 5 draft. And it's sort of like, okay, they took a step forward. It's a college player, whether they were a draft pick or a 2020 NDFA, because there were, you know, a large cache of those guys that signed at that particular draft because of how everything was set up and situated with just five rounds. You know, I think that there is a lack of sort of that middle tier now, and those players that maybe are available. And I think, you know, when I'm going through the list, I'm seeing a real lack of positional talent that's even like considerable in the Rule 5 draft, because we used to write up a lot of guys that obviously don't get picked, but even looking at the options, yeah, there's no Max Muncy, there's no guy that we write up this year where I feel like, oh, in a year from now, this position player will be like a whoopsie, why didn't anyone take this guy because he had a great year. I don't really know if there's any of those guys out there. There seems to be plenty of arms, mostly on the reliever side.
The other thing I would say is that feedback I got is, this did feel like a year, maybe because, again, the 165, the smaller, you know, there's not short season ball now. There's not, you know, the rookie levels there used to be. Whatever it is, this is a year where players who we wrote up thinking that they might be kind of on that borderline of a 40-man roster ad, almost all of those guys, I would say, were added in most cases, because this is a year where if you had a borderline case, a lot of teams decided to add. And the thing I would say with that, there still are a lot of relievers, because there are more, I would say, relief pitchers is the spot where guys go from nowhere to big league success. We saw this with the Dodgers, right? Like, I know Dave Roberts was talking about how, he was like, Ben Kasperinius, that wasn't a guy who was on my radar before the year began. And here he is pitching the big leagues. Edgardo Henriquez was not on his radar before the season began. He was pitching the big leagues in the World Series. Those kind of guys are the guys where they're still a reliever can go from kind of off the radar to on the radar very quickly. Mm-hmm. So there are going to be more of those kind of guys. But what teams have kind of done, I would say, very much with this is they also very much understand the value of an optionable reliever. So we've seen a lot of these guys get protected where it's like, this guy's not expected to be their closer down the road. He's not expected to be kind of like their eighth inning guy. It's more of a useful fifth, sixth inning guy, throws some strikes, but he's optionable. A reliever with options who can come up and down for you next year, the year after that, has a lot of value. So a lot of those guys were protected too, which this gets me back on my soapbox when I say that these rules have changed. If you go back, in 2007 is when it was changed from, it used to be that you had 3 years for a college player before you had to protect them and 4 years for a high school international. And nowadays, with the speed of how players move, I think that actually would be a much more logical decision point. Like, to just kind of give you an example, like, okay, so that would have made the 2022 college draft the one that we would have the decisions on. Here's your top guys, top first rounders from that year on the college side. And I'll let you, Jeff, when I'm done with this, you tell me protect, not protect. Jacob Berry, Cade Horton, Brooks Lee, Gavin Cross, Gabriel Hughes, Kevin Parada, Jace Young, Zach Neto, Chase DeLauder, Daniel Suzak. That's your top 20 picks. Again, obviously, there's a lot of guys going further on this, but Brooks Lee's in the big leagues. Jace Young's in the big leagues. You know, Cade Horton is a slam dunk. It would be an easy protect. Jacob Berry would probably be just as easily a don't protect. Kevin Parada would be on that kind of borderline type. Zach Neto's been in the big leagues for forever now, it feels like. That doesn't feel to me like that would be like, oh, these are incredibly, we don't know enough about these guys to decide whether to protect them. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you on that one. Yeah, and we'll see how it sort of goes. I feel like with college players, like you have a pretty good idea.
Okay, let me also throw out 2021. It would be the 2021 high school class. Again, these are the top guys in the class, but Jackson Jobe's already pitched in the big leagues. He would have been eligible because he was 19 when he signed. Marcelo Meyer would be an easy protect. Jordan Lawler's been in the big leagues already, and again, I think he would have been 19. Frank Mazzucato would probably be just as easy a non-protect, I would say at this point. Benny Montgomery, you do the Rockies. Would you protect Benny Montgomery?
If he plays 110 games this season, there's a chance he gets protected. But I think the biggest issue with him is he hasn't stayed on the field, even if the changes that we saw at the end of last year and in the fall league were real or not, you know, because there is impact tools. And it's the Rockies. It wouldn't shock me if they find maybe a spot. I mean, Riley Pine at one point did make their 40-man roster. So he's in a situation where if he does something good that's worth drafting, he's probably going to get protected.
Brady House, Harry Ford, Andrew Painter, obviously an easy one. Khalil Watson, Colson Montgomery was 19, so added at the deadline. Max Muncy, Chase Petty, Jackson Merrill, you don't have to worry about. He's already in the big leagues. Carson Williams, easy call. What my point on all of this is that these are a year shorter with the way that development goes now. I'm not saying that there wouldn't be guys who slip through and things like that, but the way development goes right now, after 3 years for a college guy, after 4 years for a high school guy, international, I would say you still would logically be 5 years. If you sign at 16, it should, you probably need a little bit more time, but like the 18 year old nowadays, I don't think you need 5 years to figure out what you got with them. Am I crazy to think that that would make sense?
No, I think it has to be just a deep 40 man roster and, you know, an organization where there were tangible changes. Like, you know, if the Red Sox don't make the Priester deal and decide not to protect Nick York this offseason, maybe that's a guy that, you know, slips through and is kind of interesting. And I just think that a lot of those players, teams are kind of smart now where it's like, all right, like we need this on the 40 man. We'd be more likely to protect this guy. This organization needs an infielder here. We can send you over an infielder. Are you willing to make this deal? And we see a lot more of those swaps happen. Where it's sort of moving 40-man roster pieces and decisions that are maybe tough for one team are a lot easier for another, and it's just a better fit. I just feel like we're seeing rosters get optimized at a probably a more efficient rate than we had in the past. That's kind of what my read's been the last couple of years.
So before we look ahead to the 2024 Rule 5 draft for the 2025 season, we should look back a little bit just at what the 2023 Rule 5 draft for the 24 season and ended up, you know, again, ended up being a very good Rule 5 draft. But most notably, the thing that almost never happens, credit to the A's, the number one pick in the draft was the most productive player from the draft. Mitch Spence went out and had what you would love to see from a Rule 5 pick, Jeff, which is to get a starter who actually is a head above water. Brad Keller did that a few years ago, but that's hard to find. It's a lot easier to find a reliever. But looking at it, like, are the A's the big winner to you of the 2023 Rule 5 draft?
Yeah, I think there's a few teams that come to mind because, you know, it was a draft where the pitching did do pretty well. My parents' dog is here while they're in Europe. So if you hear barks in the background, it is Samba the dog just saying how much she loves the Rule 5 draft. She caught the fever from me. But I think you look at the A's and you have to think that's a win. I think the Red Sox, though they didn't make this selection, they traded for Justin Slayton And in the first half of the year, he was, you know, a borderline all-star reliever. And then you see Ryan Fernandez, who got taken from the Red Sox by the Cardinals. And Fernandez had a really good season, was really important for them down the stretch. So they weren't playing in important games. He was giving them good innings, and I think has kind of positioned himself as a primary part of that bullpen going forward. So those are three winners that come to mind for me, because they all got players that I think could be valuable pieces of the future one way or the other, whether it be, you know, a reliever that's maybe in that seventh, eighth, ninth inning sort of role, or a starter in Spence. I think the biggest one obviously is Spence, but you know, they have the number one pick. They should get the best player, right? And they did their work, and kudos to them.
I'll throw one other out there. The Nationals, Nassim Nunez, they knew they were drafting a glove. The bat might not be ready yet, but to their credit, they really did a good job of getting enough value out of him defensively, base running. He wasn't a complete, you know, lost at the plate, where that's value. They found a utility infielder in the Rule 5 draft who they then pay major league minimum, who, by the way, is now part of their organization. If they want to, young guy still, they could send him back to the minors this year, get him a little bit more seasoning. And again, maybe he's long-term a utility player for them. Maybe he's more than that, but credit to them that, you know, that's like another guy who's stuck. And I think that leads into the other thing I want to talk about before we look at the 2024 Rule 5 draft, and some of the names that jump out to us. The other one I want to talk about with that is we kind of, you and I have studied this pretty extensively, and I think we've come up with some kind of rules for the Rule 5 draft. And my number one rule, let you be thinking of what your number one rule is, or number two rule, if you agree with me. But my number one rule on this is, do not take a Rule 5 pick, a Major League Rule 5 pick, thinking that, oh, he'll be really struggle in that first year, but down the road, it'll pay off. I'm not saying it's never happened, because it does happen every now and then, but it is few and far between. Again, I probably should have explained in the explainer on this. If you take a Major League Rule 5 pick, you pay $100,000, but then you have to carry him on your Major League roster, active roster, all next year, unless injured. The key thing is you can't option them. You can, if a guy gets injured, you can put him on the IL, but you can never send him down to AAA. You have to offer him back to the team that you took him, or really to any other team who wants to take on the Rule 5 responsibilities. And if that passes through that, then you have to offer him back to the team who can take him back for $50,000 of that $100,000. So you're really looking at, you're having to carry a guy on the 26-man roster all year. And sometimes you'll see teams take it, guys like, oh, he's not ready, but down the road, maybe he will be. Usually he's not. Usually at some point you get to the point you say, this isn't worth the 40-man roster spot all off season, year after year. Usually those guys end up kind of flaming out.
Yeah.
We saw this the other thing with this year, which is so really what you're looking for is find someone who can help you right away. And the most successful long-term Rule 5 picks generally have been players who fit that too. Again, talking about 21st century, Josh Hamilton, Joaquin Soria. You know, if you go before that, Johan Santana was not a zero for the Twins right away. He ended up being a bigger role down the road, but it's really hard to find the guys who didn't play in that Rule 5 season, were sent back to the minors, then came back up. That doesn't happen that often. So that's my number one rule of what you're looking for as we talk about these Rule 5 candidates. Do you have the Jeff Ponce commandment for Rule 5 picks?
Yeah, sure. I think the biggest rule, and I think it's something you have to keep in mind when you're looking at players that maybe have outstanding data or certain traits that pop to you. And that is, and I had a scout say it to me this way, and I think it's sort of wise, but you know, don't go after somebody who's going to embarrass you. If guys can't sort of hold their weight in AAA or AA, you do see some picks that do come directly from AA. I don't think we're going to see anybody in this year or in the future going forward, probably picked from, you know, anything below those levels, just because I think that the gap between AAA and AA for that matter, and the majors is huge. You can only imagine what it is from A ball. So I think that's the biggest thing, is trying to find upper minors guys that have had some success in the upper minors. The numbers don't have to be crazy. I think Mitch Spence had like a 4-something ERA, but comparatively to the rest of the league last year in the International League, it was pretty good numbers. And I think you probably want starters typically in the minors, guys that are somewhere in that like 90 to 100 inning range. Historically, that's kind of what the threshold is for a minimum. Guys have had less innings than that, but the average is sort of like 90 innings or so. And it seems like the more successful guys, even if they go on to become relievers, ultimately typically have like 100 innings or so. They have experience. They've pitched in a variety of different spots, and teams look at it and say, hey, you know, this guy is a plus slider. He throws hard enough. If he's in a relief role, maybe, you know, he's sitting 95 and 96 like he is in the first inning. And then, you know, things sort of come together from there. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just finding guys who aren't going to embarrass you, have shown that they can at least compete in AAA. And I think the last couple years with the auto zones and the challenge system, pitching in AAA has become a lot harder. You know, the separation may be there in terms of the grace you're going to get on the edges of the zone may actually be worse than it is in MLB. So I think that these guys are a little bit more battle tested than maybe even some of the hitters are. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just somebody who's not going to embarrass you. And it hurts me to say this, but like a 2024 name that I've been excited about in the past, he's a very, you know, exciting prospect to me. Somebody I consistently will watch when he's on, Griff McGarry, he kind of doesn't fit into that rule. Like, he hasn't thrown enough strikes and shown that he consistently can compete and be in the zone and, you know, go out there for an inning and not, you know, puke in himself and give up four or five runs. And I think that's one of those things where, like, the stuff is great. He looks like a major leaguer on certain days, but you have to find somebody that has that consistency in terms of execution.
I would kind of take, you know, kind of a tangent off of that, which is my version of way of saying that is the pitchers usually throw strikes, right? Like, when I first started writing up the Rule 5 draft, kind of what I started with is find the relievers who throw really hard, and, you know, include a lot of them. And some of those guys have gotten taken over the years. Rodolfo Martinez is one that comes to mind. But, like, you'll see guys taken who threw 100-plus but didn't know where it was going. Most of the time, those guys didn't stick, because you've got to be able to throw enough strikes. They go to spring training. They don't throw strikes. They quickly get off or back. Kind of the hitting version of this. Davison De Los Santos, good prospect, had a great year. Led the minors in homers, 40 homers this year. He was a Rule 5 pick last year. Had a decent spring, but the problem is first base, really not a good defender anywhere else, and a lot of strikeouts. And the Guardians decided at the end of the day, you know what, we're going to, I think they knew kind of like, hey, we've got big Christmas coming. You know, we're going to offer him back to the, you know, Davison De Los Santos, back, you know, the Guardians offered him back to the D-backs, because they just couldn't make that work, especially because we do also have to emphasize here, you got to have a separator here. The other thing I would say is, you know, salary's one of them, right? This is going to be a guy who's going to be on major league minimum. However, the other, you have to have something to be, you're competing for that, usually for that spot on the bench, usually for that sixth reliever spot, and you're not going to have options. So you've got to be better than some of these other guys. When we look at, again, when we look at the best Rule 5 picks of the 21st century, Brad Keller, Tyler Wells looks pretty good. Ryan Pressly, Darren O'Day, there's a lot of relievers. But like, you look at position players, Dan Uggla, Marwin Gonzalez, we mentioned Josh Hamilton, but Anthony Santander, who's now a free agent this year. These are guys who they had something they did really well. And generally, I would say also with that is for the position players, they had some hittability, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the other thing. Defensive value also helps. Delino Shields, Odubel Herrera were guys who were athletic and they could do some things. But having that hittability, that ability to hit is kind of the other key with that, which leads me into this, Jeff, which is okay, so after the break, we're going to take a quick look at who we like for this year's Rule 5 draft.
When creating your own business, the most important part is your ideas. So why let the headache of registering your business hold those ideas back? It's time to learn about a great idea that will keep you going and growing, LegalZoom. LegalZoom has everything you need to launch, run, and protect your business all in one place. Setting up your business properly and remaining compliant are things you want to get right from the get-go, but you don't have to strain your brain or wallet. LegalZoom saves you from wasting hours making sense of the legal stuff. At LegalZoom.com, you can take care of business legal needs in just a few clicks. And if you need some hands-on help, their network of experienced attorneys from around the country has your back. Over the last 20 years, LegalZoom helped start, run, and protect millions of businesses. LegalZoom, now you're in business. Launch, run, and protect your business to make it official today at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL to get 10% off any LegalZoom business formation product, excluding subscriptions and renewals. Expires 12/31/24. Get everything you need from setup to success at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL. LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL. Disclaimer, LegalZoom provides access to independent attorneys and self-service tools. LegalZoom is not a law firm and does not provide legal advice except where authorized through its subsidiary law firm, LZ Legal Services, LLC.
And we're back. So Jeff, teed you up. You know, we're not going to give our whole list. If you want the whole list, go to baseballamerica.com. But we are going to give you some names here. We're going to give you a little teaser of it. Who's someone who jumps out to you that you are excited about as you kind of dive in and do the, you know, work on the Rule 5 preview?
Yeah, I've talked about him before, but left-handed relief pitcher in the Rangers system, Brian Magdaleno. Just like really interesting release traits. It's a true sinker at like 94 to 96. Sweepy slider that gets pretty good stuff grades as well. Generates a lot of ground balls. He gets swinging strikes as well. And sort of has a good blend of deception and stuff. And I think a lot of teams view him as a potentially low-risk option. Not a ton of upper minors experience, but sort of has the stuff that I think projects pretty well and also has a history of throwing strikes. I think that was a really important thing that you said there. You know, just historically, there's like the last 15 years, there's been three players in the last 15 Rule 5s, because it's been 16 years because we missed one year. But the last 15 Rule 5 drafts, there's been three players that had a walk rate above 11% in the previous year. And a majority of them, I think it's maybe five, had double-digit walk rates. These are guys that stuck. So if you're looking at the successful Rule 5 picks, I think it is pretty important to make sure that they, you know, are at least a 10% or lower walk rate guy, and he falls into that category. So he's one that kind of jumps out for me. A lot of the names that have sort of popped in my work thus far have been on the pitching side.
I'm going to go on the pitching side also, and it's not because I'm also a UGA Bulldog, but Ryan Webb with the Guardians is one who, when I was doing Guardian stuff during the season, like it felt like they had kind of this assembly line of good pitching lefties, and I can understand why they have a lot of these guys, so I can understand kind of why Webb was left unprotected, but I also could understand why teams looking at him might be interested. Kind of going back to what you're talking about, this is a guy who has reached AAA, had a really good season last year between AA and AAA, throws enough strikes. It's not blow you away stuff. There's really not a, you know, there's not a seven on the scouting report. There's a lot of 45s, 50s, 55s on it, but he able to mix pitches, has kind of a track record of success, you know, as a lefty who kind of fits as a, you know, would be probably projects as a swing man. As a Rule 5 pick that you hope Mike can develop into a back of the rotation starter. Sean Gilmartin is a guy who, you know, years ago kind of was in this role, but he's one to me who, to go back to the Jeff Ponce rule, don't embarrass yourself. You know, you want to pick someone who's not going to embarrass you. I'd say Ryan Webb very much fits that. He might go to spring training and go, okay, there's just not enough bat missing here to make it work. But I would love to kind of, if I'm a team that, especially if I'm a team's a little bit, light on pitching, I would love to kind of give that one a shot. Okay, you said this is pitching heavy, but I do know there's at least one position player that you're kind of intrigued by as well. So I will put it back on the tee for you on that.
Sure.
And say, okay, who's the position player who's jumped out to you in your work so far?
Yeah, I think it's probably Christian Franklin from the Cubs. You know, I think when I sort of look at what you need to have to be a Rule 5 pick, you need to have that defensive value. I really do think that that's important. We just don't see a lot of corner guys go in the outfield or in the infield. And if we do see corner outfield guys go, it's typically somebody who can probably be passable in an emergency situation in center field. Same thing with infielders. We sort of see second baseman and shortstops. We don't see third baseman go. I think when we go back and look, and forever since
there has not been a successful true third baseman taken to Stuck in the 21st century. And exactly. before someone starts screaming at, you know, their phone here and says, Jose Bautista, he didn't stick. Jose Bautista ended up being really good, but he didn't stick. He ended up being offered back, and then they worked out a trade to keep him. But I can't find a major league third baseman who stuck in the 21st century.
So there you go. So I think that that's a big part of it. Franklin is above average defensively in, you know, at least the corners. I think it's still maybe average, maybe slightly above average. He is a good runner. He has speed, does track well out there. He's got a ton of time in center field. Underlying hit data is also pretty good with Franklin. You know, this is somebody that swing decisions grade really highly on the scale, just in terms of, you know, where he's at in terms of not only not chasing, but attacking pitches that are in, you know, the heart of the zone. Overall, the numbers were pretty good. It was a 135 WRC plus this year, which was sort of heavily based on bat to ball skills and approach. He did have a 398 OBP with a 268 average. The home run numbers weren't great. I don't know how much of that was the Southern League and Tennessee's park, maybe not playing for a swing. The underlying power numbers are actually pretty good with Christian Franklin. It's like a 330 X Wobicom, which isn't bad. It's a 104 90th percentile exit velocity, which is about major league average. The hard hit rate is, you know, about 40%. So there is power there. Like I said, it's really good swing decisions on top of that. With, you know, a zone miss rate of 18%, that's sort of above average. So there's not a lot of swing and miss here. There's some defensive value. There's swing decisions. There's uppers, minors experience where he did have some success. And I think there's maybe even a little bit of untapped power there as well, as he does hit a fair amount of balls on the ground. And he can run. I think he stole like 30-plus bases. So he can fit into a variety of roles for a team and, you know, could be a late-inning defensive replacement for somebody who's, you know, choppy in the outfield. He can be a pinch runner because he's a guy that, you know, stole 30-something bases and has that speed. And he's not going to embarrass you in terms of at-bats. He gets on base. He makes good swing decisions. He does make contact with the pitches that he swings at and has enough impact that, you know, he's not just going to be rolling over constantly and hitting ground balls into the infield. So I think of all the names I've looked at, I kind of came away like, okay, Franklin was always like a top 30-ish prospect for me in the Cubs system. But now I'm sort of looking at him and say, there's a chance here with the right organization that maybe needs that fourth or fifth outfielder with some upside. Franklin could be an option.
I'm going to throw out my position player pick is kind of, it's not a particularly sexy one, but I do want to kind of throw out, which is Sammy Siani of the Pirates, who I think Franklin's a better choice. You know, Franklin has kind of better offensive track record. Maybe not as good a defender, but has defensive versatility, has value that way as well. More time at the upper minors, double A and all that. Siani's really kind of reached double A this year, kind of spent most of the year double A. So he does have that. Did have a very good AFL. The thing I'm kind of interested in is like, and I say this because, you know, if you said, well, what's a profile you're looking at with Sammy Siani? Good news, guys. We got Mike Siani. He got his brother who's, you know, who's basically, you're like, well, what's the profile? Look at what Mike Siani did for the Cardinals this past year and say, we're going to translate that and say, could that be Sammy, you know, a year from now? That would kind of be the projection, which Mike Siani, I don't want to make it sound like Mike Siani struggled at the plate, but was a good defender, can play all three outfield spots, can run, did all those things. That's kind of what Sammy Siani is. But the thing I'm kind of interested in is that we did see some offensive improvement, some swing improvement from Sammy Siani this year. We saw that in the AFL where I think it made him at least a tougher call for, you know, whether the Pirates protect him or not. And so I could see, like, again, it's very much going to be a fit. What's the team that could take him? It would be a team who's like, you know what? We're not thrilled with our backup outfielder options right now, especially we've got a center fielder who we like, but we don't know if they're going to be an everyday guy who can stay healthy all year. We'd like to have a little bit of backup plan there. that's where Sammy Siani might fit, is someone who can play center, can play all three, but like the center field defense, the ability to run, hit enough are kind of something where it makes him at least a plausible Rule 5 pick as probably more of a backup than as a starter. But let's be honest, most of the time, if you're taking a Rule 5 position player, you're not just writing that name in ink and saying, "God, guys, we're good." You know, like it's happened before. Usually when it's happened, I will remember the D-backs years ago didn't have any catchers. And so they, when I say they didn't have any catchers, I mean they did not have any catchers in the organization almost. And so the Rule 5 runs around and they take Oscar Hernandez from the Rays, who hadn't played above A-ball, and kind of like put him into that mix. And they had, I think, Oscar Hernandez, Tuffy Goswitch, and Pete O'Brien. And Tuffy Goswitch ended up being their regular catcher because they didn't have a whole lot of other choices at that point. But so, yeah, so that's what we're talking about, is role player types. I will give you one more wild card, Jeff. Is there anyone else that you wanted to talk about on our podcast of Rule 5 Preview? There's a lot more names, a lot more depth on this and all at baseballamerica.com. But anyone else that you're like really dying to talk about?
Yeah, a lot more names, a lot more top names, but I'm gonna hold off, and I'm gonna encourage people to go and read about it on the website.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna say with that, we're gonna have a lot more names coming too. Like, I think we're up to like 30 that will be up there, but we're gonna probably get this to 60 or 70. Before we do run, we haven't really dove into this yet, but we should also explain, in our completeness of covering the Rule 5 draft, that everything we've been talking about here is the major league portion of the Rule 5 draft. And both Jeff and I are nuts, where we also get excited about the minor league portion. And one of the reasons to get excited about the minor league portion of the Rule 5 draft is the rules are very different. On the minor league portion, you just draft the player. They're yours. Here you go. Pay your money. I think it's $24,000 if I remember right now. But pay your money. The player's yours. There are no roster restrictions. You don't have to carry him on the AAA roster all year. You can send him to A-ball, whatever. But the key distinction is to be available for that means that you're not on the 40-man roster and you're not on the AAA roster. You know, so you're really not one of the, I think it's 77, 78 players, top players. And again, usually obviously there's a couple of roster spots there that are available. So more like 73, 74. But you're left unprotected on that. You're on a AA or lower roster. We haven't really dove into those names yet. We're not going to do that on the pod. That'll be something that we do at baseballamerica.com. But I do think that we should mention the fact, because also the thing we would say about that is one of the things we get excited about is every now and then guys do pop from that as well, which is kind of really cool when you see, you know, a player from a, from that pop. And I say that I've done a little bit of work looking at last year. No one had really jumps out as like, oh, how did they get this guy in the 2023?
Wasn't Mickey Gasper a 2023?
Mickey Gasper, you're right. Mickey Gasper is the star of the minor league Rule 5 draft from 2023. Yankees catcher drafted by the Red Sox, made the majors, and by the way, had a monster season in the minors. So thank you, Jeff. That is Mickey Gasper is your star of the 2023 minor league.
And I believe Omar Cruz from the Padres was taken. I think he was protected, if I'm not mistaken. So
that's another one. Again, the thing that we are seeing also with smaller rosters. And the other thing we're talking about here is when teams are looking at this, right? They are looking at, what can we do to improve a guy? Like, I mean, what you're kind of looking, you're looking in the land of misfit toys for a gem, right? You're looking for someone who, oh, okay, if we just make this tweak, if we improve this, if we move them up or down the defensive spectrum, whatever it is, like if you, again, the ideal world is you're seeing a pitcher whose pitch shapes are really good, control's good, but the way that they're pitching them doesn't fit what he's doing. That kind of thing, right, Jeff?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, you know, the best sort of targets, you know. And teams would know that better than we would, because we don't know what the, you know, the intimate details of what their player development's looking for in terms of, you know, when they're shopping for groceries, right?
But that doesn't mean that we're not going to keep looking. Yeah, this is where you're shopping at the day old bread aisle. Let's just be clear.
Exactly.
You know, this is, you're looking for bargains. You're looking for, and when we say this, I think it is the perfect way to end this. If you're interested in this, if this was fun to you, also check out baseballamerica.com. We have an all 21st century Rule 5 team. And then we also have the all, oh, it could have been team, because like there are guys like R.A. Dickey, Nestor Cortez,
Max Muncy,
Jose Bautista, we talked about, Shane Victorino, who get talked about as great Rule 5 picks. You're not a great Rule 5 pick if you didn't stick. Those are guys, you know, like R.A. Dickey won a Cy Young. He didn't stick as a Rule 5 pick. But we have the all didn't stick team, and we have the all team who did stick for the 21st century. You can check that out at baseballamerica.com. If you're listening to this also, I do want to make sure to make a point. Right now, we do not have sales at Baseball America, you know, on our subscriptions, but we are having one right now. This is, if you're listening to this anytime earlier than Cyber Monday, the end of Cyber Monday, head on over to baseballamerica.com. We have BA30. You can get 30% off on your subscription if you subscribe now. It's our Black Friday sale. Just enter that code and enjoy. You're going to get a big discount. Take advantage of that before it goes away, because I'm telling you, when it goes away, we do not offer that very often. That is really kind of almost a once a year type thing. So take advantage of the opportunity while it is. We do thank you for all our subscribers who we already have. That's why we get to do what we do. That's why Jeff and I will be in person at the Rule 5 draft. And by the way, we probably will afterwards do a, didn't do this last, but I think we've got a post Rule 5 live stream in our future this year that maybe we'll put up on YouTube and all.
Yeah, I think so.
At the minimum, we'll have a pod and in addition to all the reporting.
That's why I'm flying out Thursday morning. That way we can do the podcast and have dinner afterward.
Same here, you know, so. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.